and will be edified by our coming together today. In military or police type actions, as well as other kinds of endeavors, even like construction, there's a goal in mind. There is a target that has been decided on, a plan that's chosen, and there may be some particular thing that needs to be improved or removed, or like in a military or police type action, captured. It could be a human target, it could be a building, a hill. In construction, it could be the need for demolition or remodel. And sometimes in carrying out those plans, in trying to reach that goal, there's damage that's done. Unintended damage to surrounding property or even people, sometimes even innocent people. And of course, that was never a part of the plan. It wasn't a part of the goal to implement, to achieve. But it's unintentional and it's incidental damage that occurred in the process. And we have a term for that. It's called collateral damage. And that's a pretty common term. I think most of us are familiar with that. Co means together, and lateral means to bring it alongside. And so there's something that's brought alongside of what we were looking at that perhaps wasn't expected. On the other hand, and that's what I really want to focus on and our attention on today, there are bad things that happen in life. And they're not goals. They're not even desired by us. But they come into our lives. They are disruptive. They are painful. At times, they seem to be unbearable to us. And yet, when they are over, and even sometimes in the midst of some of those things, we can see some good things that have come out of it. Some good things that came together alongside of the bad things. And that's what I want to look at this morning in our sermon. I want to talk about the opposite of collateral damage, and that is I want to talk about, and I'm not getting anything. I don't know why we have a white space up there. Can you flash me forward, John? I won't hold you in suspense any longer. We're going to be talking about collateral blessings. And there's plenty of examples of this in the Scriptures. And I want to look at some very briefly. I want to spend some time here in the text that we're looking at in Acts, the 28th chapter, and then give you two or three other examples of that. So let's move on to Acts 28. But again, before I read this text, I want to give you the context of that. Paul is being transported to Rome. He has been in prison in Caesarea for a couple of years. Finally got tired of the back and forth and appealed to Caesar. And so now he's being sent to Rome to appear before Caesar. And the ship that he is on has been caught in a violent storm. And according to verse 1 of Acts 28, they find themselves on the island of Malta. In the process of coming to land and taking care of things, in verse 3 we read that Paul is gathering sticks, fuel for the fire that has been built. And as he's dumping his bundle of sticks on the fire, a viper that was in the sticks came out and fastened onto his hand. It was a snake that was recognized by the natives, and it was deemed venomous enough to that they expected him to swell up and die at any moment. They even surmised that he was a murderer who had gotten away from death on the shipwreck, and now justice is going to catch up with him. And then, of course, in verse 6, when nothing happened, they changed their minds and said he was a god. Now, that whole thing fulfills a promise that Jesus made that's recorded for us in Matthew, the 16th chapter, in verse 18, and that is that they will pick up snakes, and if they drink anything poisonous, no harm will come to them. But now let's go ahead and read our text here, having understood that background. Starting at verse 7, it says, "There was an estate nearby that belonged to Publius, the chief official of the island. He welcomed us to his home and for 3 days entertained us hospitably. His father was sick in bed, suffering from fever and dysentery. Paul went in to see him and after prayer placed his hands on him and healed him. When this had happened, the rest of the sick on the island came and were cured. They honored us in many ways, and when we were ready to sail, they furnished us with the supplies we needed. Let's go ahead and read verse 11. And after 3 months, we put out to sea in a ship that had wintered in the island. Let's just stop right there. So here we have a man on the island who is Publius. He's the governor of the island, and he has an estate nearby. It must have been quite an estate because he's able to house all the people that were shipwrecked. And from chapter 27 and verse 37, we find out that that's 276 people. So that's quite a crowd that he's taken in. And this is a Roman grain ship. We know that as we read through the story of the shipwreck and what they did. It is also carrying Roman soldiers and Roman prisoners. And so as a Roman holding and him being a Roman official, he has a certain civic duty to take care of that. But Luke is very careful to tell us here that he did so hospitably. So he's going above and beyond what would be required of him. And I think 276 unexpected strangers in your house fulfills the definition of hospitality. Without any problem. As a side note, we also see that the native, and I wanted to say Maltesians, but my spell check changed it to Maltines, so now you know how to give the plural of somebody from Malta, and there's more of them. They're doing the same thing. The ship was shipwrecked because of a storm. It's raining, it's cold when these prisoners and passengers, all 276 of them, swim ashore, and the natives could have stayed indoors. It's cold, it's rainy outside. They could have said, let those people fend for themselves. But we are told that they came and they showed them kindness. In fact, they built a fire, which from my experience is no small task if it's been raining for you to be able to build a fire in the first place. Paul then went on to see Publius' father. And he is suffering from attacks of fever and dysentery. That's the Greek words are words that we still use today. This fever is caused by a microbe in goat's milk, and it's still called Malta fever today. So, I mean, we still know that, and that's just, we get that because Luke's a physician. And so Paul prayed. After he went into seeing Paul prayed. Now, I'm guessing he wants to know what the Lord's will is with regard to Publius' father. Am I going to be permitted to heal him? Because it's after that he prayed that he then turned and laid his hands on him and healed him. And of course, as we read on, the people in the island heard about that, and so they're bringing all of their sick to Paul, and they were cured. Now, Malta is an island about 20 miles long, and 12 miles wide, as you can see on the map there. And as we saw at the very beginning of verse 11, they're going to be here for about 3 months. And yet we read no mention of converts on Malta. In fact, we read no account that Paul preached a single lesson to them here on Malta. We are told that when they leave, the islanders are grateful to them. They furnish them with supplies for their journey. And in fact, the miracles that we read here in chapter 28 are the first miracles we read in the book of Acts since the raising of Eutychus back in Acts chapter 20. So we've gone several chapters here and years, in fact, since we read of anybody doing a miracle. Now, all of that causes me to ask the question, so were the people, and I don't care if you're thinking about the island people, the natives there, or if you're talking about the 275 other people that were on the ship with Paul, were they blessed as a result of this tragedy that happened here in this shipwreck? And the answer seems clear to me that it's yes. These people saw several miracles. They were the 275 other passengers were saved from what would have otherwise been a deadly shipwreck. And again, because of Paul's presence and Paul's prayers and God answering that prayer that happened, they witnessed Paul not dying from a venomous snake bite. They saw Publius's father healed from a fatal disease, and it also would be very hard to miss the fact that all of the people that were sick on Malta are now well. So were these things done so they would be more willing to hear the gospel? We're not told that they did. There's no mention of any Christians after Paul left Malta. And that's really what caught my attention in this, because this seems to be a very clear case of collateral blessing. That in this bad thing that happened, God has caused some good things to take place. And in fact, they were richly blessed as a result of Paul being shipwrecked there and of them helping him and his companions. Now, I'm not going to turn there, but over in Philippians, the first chapter in verse 3, which is a letter that Paul's going to write to the Philippians when he's in prison in Rome here, he talks about the fact that the whole Praetorian Guard heard the gospel. And very possible that some of those that are part of the Praetorian Guard were on that ship. And in fact, in the fourth chapter of Philippians, in verse 22, it says some of Caesar's household had become believers. So those could have been a result of what we're reading about happening here in chapter 28. Tradition around Malta states that Publius was in fact converted while Paul was there, and that there's today still a church that has been erected on the property that he owned. Archaeological evidence seems to support that. And in fact, let me go back to the map up there. Do you see the name of that bay up in Malta? That it was named after Paul. So that was very interesting to me as well. Now, we have some other examples. I'm just going to kind of breeze through these. You're familiar with them. I'll give you the text. I'm not going to turn to them. And they'll be up on the screen as well, so you can look at them later. But with regard to Joseph was sold by his brothers into slavery. There's nothing good about that, especially if you're Joseph. There's nothing that you could say, man, I'm glad that happened to me. But he is first sold to Potiphar in chapter 39, verses 2 through 5, and we read there that everything that Joseph did for Potiphar turned out to be profitable. It was a good thing for Potiphar that Joseph had been sold. In Genesis 39 through verses 21 through 23, after Potiphar's wife does some despicable things and lying about Joseph, he's then put in the prison there. And in verses 21 through 23 of the same chapter, Genesis 39, we see that everything just went smoothly and profitably for the prison while he was there. In chapters 41 through 50, we have the dreams of the butler and the chef and of Pharaoh especially of Pharaoh, the dream of 7 years of plenty and 7 years of famine. And because of the other things that have happened in Joseph's life, Joseph now becomes a blessing to the whole nation. The nation survives these 7 years of horrible drought. In fact, Pharaoh in particular is very much blessed by it, because he's now going to be the owner of everything in Egypt, because people are paying him their land and their property just to be able to get food. So the fact that Joseph and Jacob and all of his brothers are there turns out to be quite a collateral blessing. Elijah, in 1 Kings, the 17th chapter, Elijah has prayed that there'd be no rain. There was no rain for 42 months, and he's going to be told to go up and let a Gentile woman take care of him. She's going to provide for him. And because of that, even though this is a horrible drought, she and her family will never be hungry. And Jesus, in fact, refers to that in Luke, the 4th chapter, that weren't there many widows in Israel, but God sent Elijah to this Gentile. The last one is kind of an interesting one to me, and that's the collateral blessing of a Christian who's married to an unbeliever. And of course, this is a marriage that took place or was previous to one of the spouses becoming a Christian, I believe. And you can picture these believing men and women whose spouses are not believers, wishing that their spouses were believers instead of involved in the pagan worship that they were involved in the worship of idols. And each of them perhaps, or some of them at least, thinking, maybe I need to divorce my pagan spouse and marry a Christian so that our faith can be shared. And Paul says in this text, don't do that. If your husband, unbelieving husband, is willing to be married to you, then don't divorce him. If your unbelieving wife is happy to continue to be married to you, then don't divorce them. Because Paul said both the spouse and the children are going to be blessed because you, as a Christian spouse, are in the house. And so there's going to be collateral blessings that they are going to receive by you remaining there. So those are just three other examples. And I think the same is true for us. And a key verse for us, and I want us to turn there, is in Romans, the 8th chapter and verse 28. Romans chapter 8 and verse 28 is a familiar text to you. Paul said, "And we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love Him, who have been called according to His purpose." So collateral blessings in the midst of difficulties, good or bad, but specifically here bad, for all those things that come into our lives, God can make them work together for our good. He can bring them to the end result would be ultimately for our good. And good for those thus who are around us as well. In Matthew the 5th chapter, in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus makes a statement about our influence that we have on those around us, starting there in verse 13. He said, "You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled by men. You are the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden, neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on a stand and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before men that they may see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven." So, as salt and as light in the world, as the song we just sang a few minutes ago talks about, we have the opportunity to have an impact for good for those in the world around us and in our lives. And we are, in the way that we live, actually illuminating the way things really ought to be in serving God, and illuminating the way things ought not to be as they have been deceived by Satan's plans and ploys and schemes. And as salt, of course, we're preserving the society. We're bringing some flavor into it so that it can be different and people can see that, and preventing or at least delaying the decay and God's ultimate wrath. So again, we are a collateral blessing ourselves to people in the world. But I want to bring this down to some applications for us, and I want to make a couple of very general applications to begin with, and then I'm going to try to bring it down to something very, very specific. And let's go back, first of all, to Paul's Malta trip and his miracles, and back there again in Acts, the 28th chapter. And we've seen the extent of the blessing of Paul's healing there on the island, and the possible initial blessings that came out of that tragedy. But it's also a blessing to us today, because we see that these miracles that Paul performed here are recorded for us, and that gives us even more confidence that Paul was in fact an apostle, and so that what he wrote for us is in fact the Word of God. And so the collateral blessings of God that he was able to accomplish through Paul on Malta are still felt by us today. They just continue on. Going back to the passage in Matthew, our own lights that we're allowing to shine, and the hospitality That, for instance, was shown there in Acts, the 28th chapter. Listen, you and I have no idea what influence we may have on the lives of others by the good deeds that we perform, by the kind words that we say and share with others. And in fact, the blessings can, in fact, come back upon us in Hebrews, the 13th chapter, and at verse 1. In fact, let's read verses 1 and 2. The Hebrew writer says, "Keep on loving each other as brothers. Do not forget to entertain strangers, for by so doing, some people have entertained angels without knowing it." And so we have this philoxenia, the love. We know, we recognize the philo part, the Philadelphia, the brotherly love. But the xenia here that's translated in our word, in our passage here as strangers, philoxenia is also oftentimes translated hospitality. So hospitality isn't at its root, you know, you and I sharing a meal or me having you to my house. It really finds its foundation in sharing ourselves with people we don't know and providing for them. And so he's telling us here, keep on loving each other as brothers, but also don't forget those that you don't know. To entertain those that you have no connection with. So people totally unconnected with what we do may be influenced for God and Christ later on, maybe even generations later. There is a ripple effect in all that we do, and there's a ripple effect for good things and for bad, but I want to focus on the good here. And so there can be collateral blessings that just keep pouring forth from the good things that we can do. Back in Matthew, the 5th chapter, in verse 16, following the passage that we just read, Jesus said, "In the same way, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven." And so we do these things not for our own aggrandizement or praise, but we do them so that God receives the glory and so that we will allow ourselves to be a tool to His end, because I don't know what plans God has. Paul didn't know what plans God had for the people in Malta and may not have been able to see that, and we may be involved in the salvation of a person later on that we're completely unaware of. But let's get down to something even more relevant to us with regards to the collateral blessings, and that's the pandemic that still lingers and, in fact, is worsening. I just read in the paper this morning that we've achieved now in the United States where we have 100,000 new cases every day, which we haven't seen for months. And I realize that during this time, which is almost 18 months now, some very difficult, painful things have occurred. People have lost their businesses. People have lost loved ones. We just read this morning of a member of the church where Robin's uncle, Dick's brother, James, that was just with us a couple of weeks ago, one of their members just died from COVID. And two other members of their congregation are now hospitalized. So people have lost loved ones. Plans and dreams, weddings, vacations, reunions had to be canceled, had to be changed. And I think perhaps even more significant in all this is the mental health of all of us has been strained by this. We have the worry and the concern. We have the distraction. There is the loss of confidence, the feeling of, I wrote it down so I wouldn't forget it, just general unease, a kind of a malaise. And listen, I am not in any way minimizing any of those losses, any of those tragedies, or any of those trials that have been very real in many of our lives. But I'm wanting to remind us that God is still on His throne. And His promise still stands that He can take the things that come into our lives and make them work together for good to those who love the Lord and to those who are called according to His purpose. And so I can see that there have been some very good things that have come alongside the bad of the pandemic, the collateral blessings that have come alongside that. And first and foremost, I think, is the blessings that we have received. You go over to James, the first chapter, and verses 2 and 3, which I can easily tell you is Sam Titus's favorite text. He just mentioned it last Wednesday night. He said, "Consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance." I will tell you absolutely, you will never develop perseverance if you don't go through a trial. What is there? Some of your translations say patience. What's the need for patience or perseverance if you're not being tested? I don't need patience when everything is going well. I don't need to persevere good times and blessings. And so one of the blessings that we have in going through times like this is, in fact, growth in ourselves in the area of perseverance. If you just, in my Bible, I just turn over one page to 1 Peter chapter 1. And notice verses 6 and 7. He says, "In this you greatly rejoice, though now for a little while you may have had to suffer grief in all kinds of trials. These have come so that your faith, of greater worth than gold, which perishes even though refined by fire, may be proved genuine and may result in praise and glory and honor when Jesus Christ is revealed." So going through this again, perhaps we have discovered some dross in our faith, some chinks that need to be removed. We see some areas where we need more growth, like in patience or in willingness to sacrifice for others, in not being a judgmental of others, and trying to be the examples that we ought to be. And so when we see that need for growth, it's in situations of trials like Peter's talking about here that comes to the fore. And so this is a good time to see how we did, or how good we didn't do, how we wish we had improved in some areas, and then pick ourselves up and go forward. Another area, I think, of collateral blessing is that a lot of people are now reconnecting with their faith after having been isolated from others. And in seeking out companionship, in seeking out stimulation, they have tuned in to our Zoom services. They've tuned in to the Facebook sermons. I readily admit, now my Facebook sermons that I'm still doing, I'm getting probably 15 or 20 people that are watching it a week. When I first started doing it, it was 300-400 people who are looking. They were searching for some way to make some sort of connection. And listen, people that have done that and people that are doing that, people are being saved as a result of that. That's a collateral blessing of us doing that. And listen, I don't think we'd ever started Zooming Bible classes and Zooming sermons, and I would have never thought ever of posting my sermons on Facebook. The pandemic kind of forced our hand in that. We had to find a way to reach out to one another and to reach out virtually. And one of the things that's happened now is that people that are shut in, that have not been able to participate in any way with us, now can. Remember when we used to have snow Sundays? When it was so snowy we couldn't come? That'll never happen again. We'll always be able to Zoom the service. We'll all be able to attend virtually in that way. And again, people have been saved. I think we've gained a greater appreciation for what we took for granted. It's another blessing that has come out of that. And I know that's true for me. When what was normal couldn't be done, and what was traditional didn't work anymore, and which was okay. But I don't think we appreciate some things until we don't have them anymore, or we've lost them, or they've had to change. And I think that has underscored even more so. This whole pandemic has underscored our need to trust God more, especially in things we cannot control. Listen, at least in my lifetime, and I know that I'm not that old. One of these days I won't be able to say that anymore. I'm going to say I'm that old, but not yet, I hope. In my lifetime, I've been faced with trials and obstacles like what the pandemic brought with it. I've never seen that. And there were and are so many things in our life that we cannot control. But again, it just emphasizes or ought to emphasize to us the fact that God is in control and we can trust Him. We can trust Him to do what's best for us. And we just have to decide in the process if we're going to continue to trust Him or not. I think another thing that's happened is perhaps what's become a new normal for us, in some ways, may be better than what we lost. I think some things are going to continue to be different from before. And I'm glad, I think, and hopeful to say that we've never held on to doing things just because we've always done them that way. If we find something better, something more useful, we want to do that. We want to do what's best, what's most edifying, what's most glorifying to God, what's most expedient. And if I can just share a personal opinion here on that, I absolutely love having Bible classes on Sunday night. I feel that it's a lot more effective than me preaching. I love preaching. But to have that dialogue and that interaction, to have that discussion ability in that, I think that there's a lot more positive things that are done in that than again me preaching another sermon on Sunday night. And listen, it's not less work for me. When I do a sermon, I don't have to worry about somebody saying, "Hey, just a second, what did you mean by that?" I just keep preaching and I pretend that you all understand everything that I said. But when I'm teaching a class, I have to be prepared for you to say, "Wait, what does that mean?" And so it's actually more work for me. And I understand and appreciate that not everybody's going to agree with that assessment and would like to go back the other way. I'm just saying that it's opened the door for us to look at and think about. And my point is that when it's good and expedient, let's keep doing those things and let's go back to what works, or let's continue on forward with what works. There are collateral blessings that we have enjoyed as a result of going through and still seemingly going through this time. So, I was thinking about this, you know, Paul looking back on his 3 months in Malta and thought, wow, nobody was saved. And wondering what happened there. Why didn't that happen? But I don't know. I don't know what collateral blessings that his work had. I don't even know if he knew of the lasting results of his 3 months there in Malta and what it would have resulted in. Not only on just the people that lived in Malta at that time, but in generations that followed. I mean, it's kind of an interesting thing there that bay is called St. Paul's Bay. It kind of makes me think that he had more influence than maybe he even realized. And listen, if it was just a few soldiers on the ship that obeyed the gospel as a result of that shipwreck, it was worth it. It was worth it. And who knows how many they themselves may have later on brought to the Lord. Additionally, I think that we need to have an understanding that you can't measure the success or value of your life in terms of how many people you've brought to the Lord. Our lives are to be lived joyously and generously, with love and with hope and with peace, and all of those things evident in our lives on a daily basis to those around us. And that's not that kind of just living that life is going to save other people. At some point in time, the gospel is going to have to be shared with them. They're going to have to be taught at some point. But because we seem to be at peace and living our lives and with joy and expectation of God, that's going to give us a platform. It's going to give us the opportunity to share the gospel with other people. Jesus said in Matthew the 10th chapter in verse 8, "Freely you have received, freely give." All we have, everything that we are, comes from God. It originates with Him and belongs to Him. And we need to allow Him to use it to bless us and others around us. And never allow ourselves to be dismayed because we're unable to see the results ourselves. And never, ever underestimate what God may be doing in your life, especially in times like this. We just need to open our hearts to those who are around us and be servants of God without favoritism, without any preference, and simply try to be a collateral blessing to people's lives, even in such difficult times as this. So I hope you'll think about that and maybe get a new perspective on our lives and what's going on around us. Tim selected an invitation song, "Bring Christ Your Broken Hearts or Lives, So Marred by Sin." I was thinking this morning during the Lord's Supper about the fact that Jesus came and He died and offered a body that was absolutely sinless. Never once failed to do what God wanted. Never once gave in to what He didn't want. And because He was the Lamb of God without fault and without blemish, and because that blood that flowed in His veins and gave Him life was shed, He can heal us. He can forgive us. We can have a new life. But we're going to have to bring our life to Him. He's not going to take it from us. So if there's some way in which we can help you in bringing your life in whatever state it is right now to Christ, whether you're not a Christian and you need to, on the basis of your faith and repentance, willingness to confess Jesus as the Christ, the Son of God, and to be buried with Him in baptism, we want to do that today. If you're a child of God and you're struggling, there's things in your life that have broken you and to a certain extent, please let us help you with that as well. And we invite you to come forward while we stand and sing.